Episode 46 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is August the 12th, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my former Olympic brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, former. Wait, why am I former?
Yeah, because we're not in the Olympics anymore, man. Oh. It's over. It's done. It's a done deal. The gates are closed.
That's old news, so we don't talk about that anymore?
Yeah, pretty much. Unless you're Usain Bolt and you're so insane that you want to come back in Rio. I'm pretty excited because I want to be there.
Yeah, do you think you'll actually make it back?
From Rio?
Or, you know, do you think he'll be able to compete in Rio?
Oh, do I think he will make it? No, not probably not.
Wow, jumped off that train pretty fast.
Well, I mean, it's 4 years. He's 3 days younger than me, which means he'll turn 30. While at the Olympics, and maybe the day of his 100-meter dash, you know,
Okay.
No. Sorry.
Fair enough.
I love him. I will search him down. I will hunt him down like I am a hunting dog, and I will get his autograph because I still think he's the coolest guy ever.
So you think he'll be there?
Oh, I think I'll be there.
Okay.
And I think he'll be there. I just don't think he'll be, you know. I don't know if he'll make it top 100.
Okay.
Jamaica will send him just as a advertising ploy.
Yeah, no doubt, really. But, funny. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so
former Olympic athlete, that's what I am, or something. I'm former.
A former Olympic brother. Anyways, we're not here to talk about the Olympics. We are, this week, like every week, here to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and their technology, the stuff that they're developing, building, selling, and you know, what drives the industry. So before we get into the heart of the show, James has a short disclosure he'd like to throw at y'all.
Which is super important this week, because
dive
into the depths of the HP domain, because I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions, despite how insider information I might have. So, I should always say I, and if I say we, I meant to say I. That's important because later on, and we'll get to it, I got a visit, not me personally, the site that I work at got a visit from Meg Whitman, CEO of HP, and she shared some thoughts, and I thought they were good, and I'm pretty sure she would not be upset if I shared them live with the world, because there's no secrets. It's just more of a philosophy that I think is a good philosophy for any business. So I'm going to share those.
Interesting. Hopefully I don't disagree. But yeah. It's okay for me to disagree because I don't work there. So
yeah, that's fine.
But anyways, keep that in mind. Also, if you want to follow us tonight or throughout the week or whenever, really, just, you know, you want to get on the bandwagon, check out the Furlough Bros. You can follow me. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And the whole show is at Furlough Bros. You can also go to furloughbros.com. That is the centralized hub of our universe. It is our star by which all other Furlough Bros tech, you know, stuff revolves. Go there. So the other things that revolve are like Google Plus page and a Facebook page. Pretty awesome. Like us, one of plus one us.
One up us.
One up us. We gotta be careful with those kind of references, James.
That's true. That's true.
But cool. Yeah, so anyways.
Cool. So some stuff happened this week and I'm gonna throw on my Apple hat here, and because I read this article in Bloomberg Businessweek that the title of it, which is some ways just total link bait, and it worked, was Why Apple Will Turn to Holograms.
Okay. Yeah.
And so it starts off saying, you know, gives a brief history, right? They're in a patent battle. They're getting ready for the next iPhone. And then November of 2010, like 2 years ago, they patented a three-dimensional display system that would mimic a hologram without requiring any special glasses, which I'm like, so they did that 3 years, you know, 2 years ago, and now it's suddenly, it's imminent. I don't understand. But, you know, and he's like, it's going to be awesome, and, you know, they're just, and, but what he goes on to say is that Apple needs to try to find a way to differentiate themselves from all the competition on the tablet space. And so this is what they're going to use to differentiate themselves from all the massive competition in the tablet space.
All right.
I read that and was just like, are you kidding me? I don't...
I was going to say, yeah, this is kind of a stunning assessment of the situation that the guys that have absolutely dominated, they have to differentiate themselves from the onslaught. But
yeah, which I'm like, okay. Yeah, I don't get it.
You might be able to make an argument for that. You might be able to make an argument that for that within the phone space. I mean, you're talking about really lower rung people who aren't paying attention, that might feel like you need something to really outshine Android, but to just as a differentiating factor, that's crazy. That guy's wrong. I usually like Newsweek, but that's just dumb.
Businessweek, not Newsweek. Is that a difference?
Businessweek, sorry. I don't know.
Who cares, right? I mean, they're writing this garbage.
Right. Oh, snap. What's really funny about it is the question of, why would Apple, I don't know, why would they, who are suddenly in 2010 competing in the handheld electronic gaming world, want to patent something like, I don't know, heads-free or glasses-free 3D displays? It might be something with one of their main competitors has the exact same technology, and they just wanted a patent to cover it in case it suddenly exploded so that they didn't have to battle with Nintendo. I mean, I saw that 3 years ago, and that's exactly what I thought was,
yeah,
this is nothing. This is, everybody's making a big deal about this, but this is just, you know, one of the things that I think people don't understand about patent, how patents work, and this is the best analogy I've ever heard, is that when you write a patent, it's like you say, we want a patent. It's like, you could think about it as like buying real estate, right? You go out and
I like
say,
this analogy.
I'm gonna buy this chunk of real estate. I'm gonna buy this land. And this land covers the idea of holographic display or 3D displays, head-free display. And then what happens, one of the weird parts about copyright laws is that you now own this 400 million acre plot of land. And then Google comes in and says, what about 3D holograms for OSs? And basically, then they stake out ground within your ground and they patent it. And now legally, both of you have cover on that. And then Apple comes and they go, what about holographic 3D OSs for iPhones? And now they've got like this, you know.
Yeah.
So people are, you know, and that's like the nature of how copyright works. And so it's like one of those things where a lot of times Apple comes out with these patents that the only reason why they're patenting this technology is because they think that in case suddenly the market turns that way, they don't want to have to be battling with somebody else who's already thoroughly patented. If you know, once there's a certain saturation level, you can't really patent it anymore. But when they realize that there's a new idea, they want to basically lay stake to part of that real estate so that in case they ever have to move there, they can and not have to worry about the patent problem. It's something that Google never does, which is why Google is in a heap of trouble right now. Apple is exceedingly good at this. They've got really great patent lawyers, and that's why they do stuff like that. Whereas Google doesn't know what patents are, and so they tend to get into hot water on a regular basis.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, they, yeah. they want to seek forgiveness instead of ask permission first, which is
right.
fine.
And the thing is it's like, you know, to be in total transparency, I think that our patent and copyright laws are pretty messed up, and I don't agree with them. But the thing is that Apple's just playing by the rule book as it is, and they play really, really well, you know, and I can't fault them for that. But to think that – I think, you know, if to read – you know, it's like reading tea leaves looking at Apple patents. And if you don't take into consideration stuff like why they would patent it, you're just going to be totally misled into thinking that – you know, Apple might come out with a cool 3D display. They might have even looked in – they probably looked into it. The technology exists. Would it be useful? And then they decided, yeah, maybe in 10 years, but nobody cares right now. So we're not going to do that.
The other thing to kind of bring it back to why this article is wrong is he assumes that the differentiation is all about hardware. You know, he's like, well, their problem is their touchscreens are just like everyone else's touchscreens, so they need a way to differentiate themselves. It's like, well, actually, it's what the screen is displaying is the really valuable part.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like, yeah, that's all kind of important, but, you know, really, it's – they don't need holographic. All that to say is I'm not predicting that happening.
I'm calling them. That was a – this is what they call the dog days of summer. This is where journalists have to really stretch to meet deadlines, and I want solidly a dog days of summer, dog days of August article.
Yeah, well, congratulations, you got me to talk about it.
Yeah, you got the hits. I guess that's what's important. So, did you watch The Landing of Curiosity?
Yes, I did actually. I got back from my softball game just in time.
Awesome. And as we pointed out, I was watching the Olympics, so I didn't watch Curiosity. But this was the thing. How did you watch Curiosity Land?
They had a YouTube stream or Ustream or Justin TV. Or, what is it? Ustream? Was that what it was?
You watched online? I don't know. I didn't watch.
Okay, online. Cool. Being that I don't own a television. Yes.
Yes. That makes sense. Actually, now that you mentioned that, I should have guessed that. Turns out you weren't alone, though. They had something like 4.5 million viewers, which is pretty huge.
That sounds right, because I think at one time it shows you how many watchers there are, and I think it was in the 4-something million range.
Well, it was, yeah. Well, what happened? Well, no. They had 4 million total across all platforms. They had 3.7 million viewers. Online though, and only 1.7 on live TV.
Oh.
Which is crazy. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I like to pay attention to these, you know, kind of changing of the tides moments. Clearly, I guess what my point in bringing this up is, clearly people want to watch stuff online. At least, you know, in curiosities, it's a certain niche of tech savvy users is the trend. But it's like, man, if you would just put it online, more and more evidence, live events, non-live events, movies, TV shows, people want to watch them on their computers. They want to stream them live. You know, NBC, pay attention. You know, what was that joke on, like, all the late night shows that the day these statistics come out? It's, you know, they're talking to the NASA guys. They're like, it takes NASA 4 minutes to get an image from Mars all the way back to Earth. It takes NBC 12 hours
to get an image from London back to the United States.
Yeah. Jeez.
Oh, so true.
Yeah. It's, you know, anybody who thinks that, anybody who honestly believes that TV is not a dying technology and, for whatever reason, I find this strange. Radio seems to be this sort of like stalwart thing. I'm not sure if I use that word right. Thing that sits there, and for whatever reason, you know, it keeps getting hit by these new technologies, but it keeps eking out an existence. Whereas I think TV, man, once the internet figures out how to really deal with it, you're gonna watch over the next 100 years. TV will have like. Network TV will have hit its peak and be on the way out. And you know, just because as soon as you give people a choice, they in droves they turn to non-prepackaged content on their mobile devices, on their computers. Wow, it's interesting.
Yeah, totally is. So,
So.
be honest, my screen's getting a little shaky. How's
Laggy.
yours looking?
My screen's fine.
Okay, it's me.
What's
Not. I guess you should start turning stuff off, right? Is that the
Hey man, black yourself out.
really have anything on. Hey, my phone's going nuts. Haven't turned anything on for that. Weird. All right, looks like I'm back. No big deal. That's cool though. I'm glad that, or I should not glad. Yeah, I hope that NBC's watching and that more stuff goes online, especially since I don't have a TV.
Right. Yeah.
Cool. So it looks like you have an iAd you want to.
Oh, baby. So this was exciting. So this link is actually a YouTube link, and because it was sort of a news story, sort of a press piece out of Apple. It's not worth watching.
It's not. It's
No.
just music.
The Range
I
Rover
know.
Evoque is something that's all new for Land
It's about the
Rover.
Range Rover. All right.
Let's see. You'll let me talk about
No,
it, or
go
you
for it.
not? Bulldoze me with my video. So anyway, so what this is it's a fascinating little press piece, because what it is iAds. We know what iAds is. It's Apple's network of advertisers. They're super easy to embed in your apps, and the whole idea was, it's a way to monetize free apps. It's a way to encourage low cost apps. That's what Apple's wanted from the beginning. And so you go through this and buy, you make money. Well, and obviously there's all sorts of ad networks. Google has their own. There are a couple other ones that you can use to serve up apps within, or ads within apps. But what Apple wanted to do is they really wanted to try to, they claimed that they wanted to try to do something new, where basically instead of going for these like low end couple $10,000 advertising bucks and just get tons and tons and tons of them and then try to target them, Apple was like, we want to get budgets. We want to get like $300,000 marketing budgets. We want to get big time marketing campaigns from your big corporations. We want to take money away from TV and radio and newspaper and put them in iAds. And one of the way we're going to do that is make these really immersive, cool apps that people enjoy using. And it sounded ridiculous and dumb at the time, because who wants an immersive app? Like, I get it. Apple makes these really cool ads that people like go online and watch and stuff, and they're all, they're insanely great, whatever. But really, and it's I was just reading today about the debut of the 1984 won't be like 1984 app, or I mean ad. And so it's like, this is kind of resonating. Like, yeah, you can see this is like part of Steve Jobs's vision of advertising can change things. And it's so I just was like, let's see if the proof is in the pudding. And this is the first one where they're kind of coming out there as this, like, as where it's an advertisement for iAds in a big way.
How weird.
But basically what it is they sat down with the guys from Range Rover. Range Rover is designing a new cool car. And they wanted to advertise it, and so they basically they've been dumping millions of dollars into TV, radio, and whatnot. And one of the things that they decided to go with and try out was Apple's iAds network.
Okay.
It's the biggest, and so basically what they did was they sat down with Apple, and they did a couple of cool things. Like they built like these models of the cars, where you can flip out hubs and different features and colors and stuff, and
Okay.
so you can like custom build your car, which of course you can purchase through the app.
Awesome, of course.
Well, I don't know if you can purchase it, but you can like save it and say, this is the car I want. You can get your custom order that way. And they have a couple other things. Like they had a one of your oh man, what are those called? Augmented reality apps, where basically what it does is it has a 360 panorama of the entire inside of the car, and it uses the gyroscope to tell you, like, so you know where you're looking, so you can look at the car. You know, you can see around corners, you can see what, you know, you can look at the dashboard.
That's
you
cool.
can look at the seats. Yeah, I thought it was kind of neat. They had a couple other things, but one of the big things they said is that, like, iAds is really smart because it doesn't, because unlike Google's ad networks and stuff, where they're just looking at websites you've had in past history searches, iAds can, like, look at your playlist. They can look at, like, what apps you have. They can look at all sorts of crazy stuff. And what they said was, they go, our demographics are so good that we can basically pick people who we know will be interested in this ad, because we know what kind of music they like, and we know they'll like the music in this ad. We know that they're into cars because of all these car apps that they have. So we're going to show them. So what they basically did is they said, what we're going to do is we're going to make this cool app, and we're going to design it for a specific set of people, and we are going to just drill into these people. We're going to present them with this specific ad for Range Rover. And you sit there and go, man, that is cool in concept, but does it work?
Right.
And Range Rover came back, and they said, well, so this is what we're comparing ourselves against, okay? We've got about 30 seconds on average, 30 to 60 seconds, but usually 30 seconds of passive ad viewing on, like, TV, radio, whatever. That's all we're getting to send out this new car, new model, this new message. On iAds, people who clicked on the iAds, on average, resonated for 80 seconds on the app.
Wow.
Trying out the different features. Yeah, which is just like, they were like, our minds are blown. This is like, this is how you sell cars. This is how you sell products. This is how you convince people. You build something cool that people will actually stay around and look at. And Apple wins big time on this one, because this is big time advertising budgets. These are, you know, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $1 million, and, you know, as things get bigger and it gets better, you're talking $10 million marketing campaigns that are going for very specific targeted audiences based on what they do and what they like and what they, you know, and what they have. So you and the best part about that is if you're resonating, when I say resonating, I mean you are actively using the app for 80 seconds, not trying to get out, not trying to click on the home screen, but you're actually playing with it. You know, that's the sort of engagement that just is like, just drool worthy.
Yeah, totally.
And iAds has achieved it. They've proven that people will look into something like that. And so the reason why I tipped this at Facebook, because to me, it, like, immediately I said that, you know, we talk about what Facebook can do differently. And I think one of the things that they've really tried to do is they've really tried to model themselves after Google, where Google is really like, you know, okay, they're making billions and billions of dollars based on basic, you know, AdWords and kind of this massive attempt to target boring ads at you and just let people design their own ads. But I think if Facebook were to really step back and not just, you know, put Ford or GM trucks on your page and hope you click, but really get into this idea of immersive, interesting, interactive advertisements that are really focused on certain demographics. Apple's proven that it's totally possible. People respond to it, and you're talking about huge budgets. You know, you're talking about the sort of thing that can really make and break, you know, entire technologies. I sit there and I go, you know, there's a lot of different things that Facebook can do, but I really am, you know, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I sit there and I go, man, Facebook, this seems like a big one. You guys gotta start playing with big league money here, like Apple does, and not just, you know, because right now they're just competing against Google. I don't know.
Yeah, and it actually makes sense. Like, you know, Google's got their ad mob thing, and they could have some sort of ad network as well, where, you know, hook up your account to their, you know, to Facebook, and which most apps do already. Yeah, throw a Facebook banner ad or something in there, and, you know, they right. could do similar things based off of your interests, and, you know, and they can team up. I mean, they got their self-serve thing, but then they can also team up with the bigger houses as well, and, you know, really.
Yeah. I think that's what Apple's done differently, is that they've really, they're not just talking, they're teaming up with really smart artists that are really good at advertising, and they're throwing their engineering weight behind it too. You know, that's something that I really feel like Facebook has really not done at all, is thrown their engineering behind their advertising, their engineering team behind their advertising. Because it's one of the things that Apple, that, you know, that one of Facebook's core competencies is a great team of engineers. And you sit there and you go, man, if you guys could sit down and build custom cool apps and chunks of Facebook for these different advertisers, you may not, you know, I don't know. I shrug my shoulders and I say, you know, Apple was willing to kind of take a risk and play with the big leagues, and they're basically banner ads is what they are. I
mean, yeah.
It's not anything new or revolutionary. It's just what's always been. And so you sit there and you go, Facebook, it's time to step up. It's time to play the game, guys. You know, you gotta, you know, you can do this, but, just my thoughts.
No, that's cool. That's a cool example. I like it. I wouldn't mind seeing more of those.
Yeah.
Less ads, more immersive. How about that?
Yeah, that is a good. I think that is something that people would love to see on the internet.
Totally.
Yeah. But.
So, I teased it at the very beginning. The time has come.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. So Meg Whitman, who is the CEO of Hewlett Packard, the company I work for, just in case you already forgot, whom I don't represent, she came and visited the site that I work at, which is pretty cool. And part of any time some muckety-muck person shows up, they give a talk. We call it a coffee talk, but they give a coffee talk. You know, basically they address everybody who's there. You know, kind of goes, "Oh, here's what's up," and you talk about what you've learned and kind of what your thoughts are, and then you do like a Q&A session. It's kind of seems to be the generally accepted format of these types of events, for the most part. So, having a CEO there. You know, there's some good questions that were asked.
Yeah.
And, you know, and questions that honestly we've talked about on the show and that I have voiced, both maybe on the show and, you know, to friends. And I thought what was cool is, people actually asked similar questions and she gave answers. And,
nice.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. I just kind of wanted to share what it was. And again, I'm not going to, there's no like, secrets like, oh man, here's what's happening, you know, and these are things that she has been saying, I feel like, but it was nice for her to just like, one of the things I like about her is she's very, she seems at least to be very like straight shooter, like, I'm just gonna tell you how it is. I'm not gonna try to give you the BS corporate line. I'm gonna, you know, if I don't think we're doing it, I'm gonna tell you that. You know, and so one of the questions I thought was awesome was the person goes, 20 years ago, the bulk of HP's profits came from calculators. Today, the bulk of HP's profits come from printing. 20 years from now, where do you think the bulk of HP's profits are going to come from? You know, which is indirectly asking, what's next?
Right. Yeah. Our favorite question.
Yeah, and her answer was interesting, because she goes, honestly, no clue. I don't know. She goes, as far as I can tell, it's still printers, but, you know, obviously things change. And she's like, but she goes, but what I do know, or what she said is, because honest, she has, like, no control over that. And she's also essentially admitting that HP doesn't have anything awesome coming down the pipeline right now. Which is why she's making this big press towards we need to fire people to free up money to throw it into R&D. Because right. She goes, the one thing she does have control over are budgets. And she goes, and I'm sure she didn't say this, but I'm sure she realizes that, you know, just because you throw money at something doesn't mean, oh, it's magically fixed. But that is one way of, you know, helping to ensure that it might fix the problem. And she was like, in essence, yeah, we're taking a huge bet. I don't know if we're going to come up with something in time.
oh, man.
Well, yeah. Well, and I mean, she's not talking like we have like 3 months.
Right. 20 years is the time frame he gave her.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And printing is not going away in a year. I don't think we have 20 years. But, that's my opinion. But it was cool to hear her, because I've been saying, I'm like, dude, HP's got nothing down the pipeline right now. You know, right. it's printers and PCs, and that's the big consumer thing. And she was like, yep, that's what we have. There's nothing magical. She did say that she got pressed a little more, like, okay, fine, you don't know what it is, but what do you see as kind of like where all this is headed, you know? Which you're right. Like, okay, good question to ask the person in charge of the company who, you know, will earn money off of this whole where are things headed, hopefully.
Right.
And her, I think I'm pretty sure I can say this. Her thought or current thinking are what she called convertibles, which I was like, all right, that's a weird word. I would call it a convergence device, but that's just me. Because she was saying that right now, like, for her personally, she goes, I own an iPhone. She's like, awesome. She goes, I own an iPad, and I have a laptop. She's like, I carry 3 devices around with me now in my, you know, daily whatever. She was like, can we get that down to 2? And then can we get that down to 1? She's like, that would be kind of cool. She's like, because, you know, I got a smartphone, and I got rid of the PDA. All right, neat, but... now I filled that void with something bigger, an iPad.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so she's like, for her, which I don't know, maybe that is kind of tipping her hand on where, you know, HP Labs or, you know.
She's going to make Google goggles. That's what she's going to build.
Yeah, convergence.
HP goggles.
No. The one thing she talked about was a tablet PC combo. She goes, that's an obvious one. If you can figure out how to detach the screen from the laptop, a la Surface, I guess. I don't know.
I was going to say, you mean what Apple's been doing there for the last 4 years? Awesome.
Well, no. In the sense that, like, you know, you are, like, on the fly. Like, you could, you're at your desk, you got your computer, you're working. Oh, I got a meeting. You grab the screen, take that to the meeting, leave the keyboard behind.
Okay, I get that. I'm just pointing out the fact that literally the iPad launched with a keyboard dock.
Okay, well, but the idea is that it's her, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
In the sense that it's
saying...
a PC first, it's a tablet second.
Okay, all right. Okay, there. that's distinctly different. I don't know if I want to say that's distinctly different, but it's different. It's different enough where I'll give it credit.
Okay. Right. All right. Fair enough. So anyways, so that was like one example, which there's no HP product. I don't know. But that was just her like just spitballing is what it sounded like.
Yeah.
So anyways, then I thought a really good question that she asked or someone else asked was like, so what are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities that HP has had so far? It's like, because I don't know anything other than printing right now, because that's what people are where I work. And she actually went through division by division, like, okay, here's where they messed up, and here's where we have opportunities to improve.
Wait, and, can you share any of that with us?
Just generally what it was, because her whole thing was like, she really had to press for VPs and stuff to actually like talk to her and admit that they had made mistakes. And cause she's like, cause until you identify the problem, it's like you have nothing to fix and everything's fine. Right.
Right.
You know, the ship's not sinking. Totally fine. What's it? This is not water. That's something else.
Yeah. You know? This is liquid gold.
Yeah. Yeah. No, water's good. We want more of that. It's fine.
Yeah. Water sustains life.
Yeah. We drink it. So, lap it up, man. No, it's so she was like, it took a really long time for her to get them to admit that things weren't perfect, and she's like, and now they have. And so very generally what they were market trends or shifts that HP just totally missed. I mean, even like within the printing space, there are printing trends that HP totally missed. and you're just like, you know, for being like the worldwide leader in printing, well, not totally. So, right. Here, let me ask you this. Here's one. You know those big like copier machines that you see at Kinko's and at like office, what is it, Staples and Office Depot, and you know, even in like big offices?
Yes.
How many of those are HP devices?
Not a lot.
Bingo. Because they call them copiers.
Right.
But
they print off thousands and thousands of pages.
But they're copiers. So copiers. HP doesn't make copiers. We make printers. Yeah, exactly. HP's addressing that.
Yeah. That's one of those. That's as classic as Sony's. We don't compete against the iPhone because we make handheld video game players. They make handheld devices that play video games. You see, they're totally different.
There's
no crossover. We will never compete. People will have budget for both. It's crazy that you would suggest that we compete with those. That's pretty awesome.
So I thought it was fascinating that she went through every single division. And the crazy part is, and this is part of HP's problem, in every single division, there was something like that where you just go,
right.
Oh, how did you not do that one? That seems like a big opportunity.
Right.
You know, and so, I mean, that was encouraging, right, to at least have the leader going, hello.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a... You know, unfortunately, as like, you know, as an entrenched CEO, you can't always do that. But it's good to have a CEO, you know, come out and say, you know, this is the state of things. You know, I worked for a company that stumbled pretty hard, ended up losing my job because of it. And when the new CEO came in, and he took like months, it took like 6 months to finally get to the point where he could say, wow, this is what we have. And it's not nearly as pretty as everybody was making it out to be. And, you know, you guys, you know, to say you painted it with rosy tones is a bit of an understatement. You know, and you know, it's, yeah, I mean, that's a great way of putting it. You know, the copiers, I think, is a great example of, like, we'll call it, it's a different thing, so it's not competition. What are you talking about, you know?
Oh, and, yeah.
But... I don't know.
Yeah, no, so she, the thing that I'll come back to is that she was like, she goes, I don't know how to fix that. I mean, in the example I gave seems pretty obvious, but, you know, but HP doesn't have any, or has, as far as I'm aware of, you know, they don't focus in that area, and it's a different type of beast than something that sits on your desk. And so, you know, so her thing again was, well, this is why, she goes, unfortunately, the money has to come from somewhere. And it's easier to let go of people than it is to sell buildings because, well, we still got to have – you know, it's weird. And so she's like, so we're letting go of some people in areas. That always sounds like a lot because it's a huge company to begin with. But we're letting go of some people to free up money to go tackle some of those issues, to get those quick wins, while at the same time trying to answer that 20-year question.
And, interesting.
Yeah, which, you know – cool, right?
Right.
I was, like I said, I drank the Kool-Aid a little bit. I got a picture with her, and so she's my best friend now, and so there's all that. But but yeah, no, it was encouraging. And the thing that I've said about her is she seems to always be saying the right things. And it's a question of, can we do the right things? Which, again, and she'll tell you, well, it's not in my control. She goes, I literally control the budget. And even then, not totally. And, you know,
right.
She's like, and that's when she goes, it comes down to you, engineers. Figure it out.
Right.
All right. Yes, ma'am. It's not up to me. I'm not an engineer, so I don't have to worry about it. I just listen and enjoy.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's such an interesting thing. I guess I'm, you know, it's hard for me to not read Jobs' biography and not drink the, not so, dude. I got done reading. So this morning I was reading, like I said, I was reading about the launch of the Macintosh. The original Macintosh. I got done reading that chapter and wanted to go buy one. I mean, it just was like, you know, decades later, I got sucked into the distortion, or the, you know, the reality distortion field.
Hey,
and,
pro tip, go into the barn tomorrow.
Oh, really?
And mess around, see what can be seen.
Really? Interesting. I will have to do that.
I don't know if it's an original, but there's, it's, it looks like one of the first Macs.
That's awesome. I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I, because,
and that might have been the one where I redid the file system for Dad when I was a little kid. So
yeah,
woo. Yeah, but yeah,
it just works.
go. It's gonna be in the, when you walk in, go into the right hand room.
Okay. I'll check that out.
It's,
yeah,
really,
but that was one of those things where, you know, but what I was gonna say is,
you might even see the Apple II down there somewhere.
Oh man, but one of the things that really fascinates me about reading this is you know, and this is one of the things that Steve was notorious for, was that clarity of vision of, you know, he you could ask him any day of the week. Since he was 15, what are we going to be doing 20 years from now? And he may change his mind tomorrow, but every day he
right.
knew what was going to be the new thing 20 years from now. And it, so, you know, it, that's in, and, you know, obviously there, you, HP is a totally different company from Apple in a lot of ways. And it has a lot to do with the fact that Apple was a top-down, you know, dictator of what happened, whereas, you know, Meg Whitman can't do that. But just because
someone actually asked about that, they were like, "So why doesn't, what was he saying?" He was like, he was talking about, he goes, "HP has to be centralized or decentralized because of its size, you know, and how do you deal with that or something like that?" And I was like, "Has to be decentralized?"
Right.
Apple missed that memo, I guess.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, yeah. And yeah, really.
So did Microsoft and Google, right. for that matter.
Yeah.
Actually, seriously. Google was pretty decentralized, I think, from a divisions standpoint.
Well, as long as you don't, like, get caught in – as long as you don't catch the attention of one of their co-founders, CEOs, chairman – you're decentralized, and then as soon as you catch one of their attentions, it's done. You're under their, you're
yeah.
under their microscope. But you know, and so my, and I guess why I bring that all up is it's interesting to me that, you know, the one thing she goes, what will we be doing in the future, is something that's clearly, you know, I laugh and yeah, okay, I can understand. But yeah, what is the surface other than exactly what she's describing? And really and truly, you know, you walk into any Microsoft store nowadays, which actually they're kind of cool. They're not quite as much fun as an Apple store, but they're not bad. But you walk in and they have tablets with keyboards and mice, and you can just take the keyboard and walk away with them. I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, I've even seen an HP version of it. It might all be Acers and Dells, but you sit there and you shrug your shoulders and you sit there, or, you know, you talk about convergence and, like, okay, convert, you know, I don't want to rain on your parade.
No, dude, bad. That's what this is about.
But,
go for it.
But
I'll defend her valiantly.
But, you know, you ask the question, it's like, okay, convergence is definitely, yeah, that's definitely a thing. It is happening, and it is cool. And one of the big challenges right now is the screen size, and that's why things like Google Goggles are so exciting, because what you can do is you can easily see a future where you, like, you have your leapfrog technology where it can, like, see all of your fingers simultaneously. You've got your glasses are on your eyes. You got your headphones, and suddenly you are entirely immersed in the screen. So it doesn't matter how big you want the screen to be, whether you want it to be a small icon for a phone number overlaid over the rest of the world, or you want it to be a, you know, an IMAX movie experience, you're totally immersed, and as long as you don't need, and then suddenly any physical surface is the right size. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you go, once you've taken care of those challenges, then now it's just making scalable OSs that do everything.
Right. Yeah.
You sit there and you go, that's a challenge, but honestly, 5 to 10 years. Like, okay, now impress me again. I want 20 years. You know, like, let's get really excited here. Like, convergence, this whole idea of convergence, I'm willing to bet that the iPad, you know, won't be around in 10 years, you know, even close to its current form. It'll change sizes because what they're going to feel around for is what is the right size.
Well, as you learn about in the chapter you just read, it right. started out as running a single app at a time, black and white, if I remember correctly. Where was there color on that one?
The original Mac had color.
But it was one app at a time, right? Right. Just like iOS. And I think they've made improvements significantly faster than they did with the Mac, of course, but you know, but eventually the Mac got to running multiple apps, doing a whole bunch of background stuff, and I think Google is pushing Android in that direction a whole lot faster. I think you'll see Android look like a standard operating system faster than you'll see iOS do it.
In so many ways, it already. The only limitation on it is the screen size. I mean, and to a large degree.
But I could see them where eventually, I don't know, they're, you know, to me personally, I'll be like, okay, it's arrived, I guess. When it's when you can run Excel, like full on, give me some pivot tables, let's hook up a database. I don't care if the database is in the cloud, but you know, like
5 years,
when you can do that, I'm going to be like, okay, we've got, this is it. I don't need a computer anymore. When you were talking about when you can program, when you can type code and, you know, and debug and access FTP sites and do all of that stuff. And not and in a way that feels right.
Right.
Like right now, it's like, yeah, I think technically you can do it, but you got to want it. You know, you are right. You're making a choice.
It's interesting, you know, website editing, there are some great apps that you can get for like iPad where FTP client connects directly to your database. It's got good text editors, so you can do, you know, you can't do like Dreamweaver, but you can do for web develop of my scale, it's great. It like really handles it well. There are already programming apps out there. Obviously, you can't execute that code, but you can write it. There's a text writers out there. So if you're on the plane and you just want to type it out really quick, you can do that. And then, you know, push it to your, you know, it's slowly things are developing there. Well, they're not slowly at all. That's what my point is. It feels slow because we're used to things exploding, popping every month, but it's not slow by any means. It's like really, really, really rapid.
Right.
And it's continually to get faster and faster. And one of the things I've talked about on this show is the idea of deconvergence. I actually think that that's the thing that happens after, you know, after this big trend, and it's the Internet of Things. You know,
we've seen it with this apps too. I mean, it's
right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know what I want from Facebook, and every time I talk to anybody about this, they always agree with me, is I want one centralized Facebook app. That's cool. I don't mind that, but I don't want to use it for everything. I want a Photos app. I want a Messages app. I want all these different apps so that the things that I use, I can focus on just those one at a time, and then the things that I don't use, I don't have to have those on my phone. I think there's going to be a huge trend from centralization, all of your computation done on your computer, and then this explosion of the Internet of Things, and you know, and you know, we keep talking about that and predicting that, but man, that one has been bulldozing its way along this path for decades, and stuff that's going on with like Raspberry Pi, things that you're seeing pop up on Kickstarter all the time, movements, big time movements that are being made with Arduino, you know, and all of these old school traditional microprocessors that used to be really expensive with a high activation energy to get into, those walls are just crumbling, and all of a sudden all these things that used to be really difficult to get into and really super expensive, now they all have IP addresses, you know, and it's like we are rapidly racing to the point where your computer is connected to your phone, is connected to your refrigerator, is connected to your PC. Somebody made some stupid joke about the fact that why would I want to be able to use Twitter on my refrigerator, and you just want to like smack him and go, no, you don't want to use Twitter on your refrigerator. But the point is, you can, which means you can run similar types of apps. And why that's important is because Twitter may not be useful on your phone or on your fridge, but internet connected databasing, I don't know, things like Remember the Milk, that would be pretty cool to have that connected to my phone, connected to my computer, to my car, and to my refrigerator. That would be advantageous. It's just Twitter's one of the big ones, so you put Twitter on there. You know, you just shrug your shoulders and you sit there and you go, I like what Meg Whitman is saying, and I definitely think that is the trend hardcore right now. Bring everything onto handheld devices, try to get rid of the computer. But it's like, you know, if we stick with Jobs' vehicle analogy, during the during the vegetable era, where everybody was farmers, agrarian era, everybody had trucks. And then once you move past that, yeah, trucks still exist, but now people have compact cars. Well, people don't just have compact cars now. People have motorcycles and sports cars and compact cars and Segways and bicycles and motorcycles and airplanes, and we have all sorts of different things. You have this explosion of diversification for specific tasks. And I think you sit there and you go, yeah, most computing will occur on these diversified things, but transportation itself has really gotten crazy, where there's all sorts of niches now, and I think that's exactly what you're going to see, but only exaggerated with computation. And that's the sort of thing, man. If HP decided to throw its weight behind microcomputers and building internets of things, that's the sort of R&D where, you know, yeah, you throw a couple $1 billion into that, you can start selling stuff that 20 years from now could be really rocking the world. You want to do smart, you know, light controllers that connect to your, you know, you make little lights that control your lights. Power switches that
remotes?
Control your lights.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Power switches that control your life, that connect to your phone. That's the sort of thing that HP could do, that they could throw their weight behind and just completely change the market, where in 20 years, you can't buy a normal light switch anymore. Because
wouldn't that be crazy? Our biggest partner is Home Depot instead of Staples.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's like, yeah, you sit there and you go, why shouldn't that be the case? Other than the fact that that isn't the case now and that hasn't really been the case, why should Microsoft be HP's biggest partner from a software perspective? Why should be Safeway's big or Staples be HP's biggest vendor? Why can't it be Home Depot? Why can't it be GE? Why can't it be Ford? Why can't it be these companies? They're desperate to bring cool technology to their platforms that's useful, because theirs is awful, and yet they know that that's what everybody wants. And so they're trying, and they're making these horrible decisions. And that's the place where, man, I think HP could really, if they decided to really go, you know what? We want to be here in 20 years. That's what you got to start looking at. And at the same time, obviously, you know, really aggressive server-based stuff. Because that's the other big, you know, the other big part of the Internet of Things is everything has an IP address, and there's an internet backbone that can handle that, that has use for that. You know, and if HP were to really focus on those two things, man, that is the future. Apple has the current day technology. They really do, and it's going to be difficult for anybody else to, I think, for anybody else to really bust into that in the next 5 years. All you want to do is make sure you don't fall too far behind. But you want to leapfrog Apple, you got to start thinking beyond the computer, because you know I don't think HP is going to win any more than they are. You know, they're the number one seller of computers in the world, so it's not like they're a loser. Now the question is, how do you replace the printer? And I think it's by saying, number one, you figure out how to replace the printer with technology, and you replace it. And number two, you ask, well, what other pieces of technology do other people make their livelihoods on, and how can we replace those and really mess them up? Because that's what everybody's doing to our printer business.
Totally.
Let's turn the tables and pick on somebody else, you know. And I sit there and I shrug my shoulders and I say, and I get there and I'm like, it's awesome that Meg Whitman is willing to call people out. And maybe what she's going to do is really free people up to creative, smart people to come up with these ideas and push with that. But man, it would be nice to have her at least say, this is where I think we're going to be in 20 years, and change her mind tomorrow if she realizes she's wrong. You know, I think there's such a hesitation to be strong for something and then change your mind when you realize you're wrong.
Yeah.
And people hated that about Steve Jobs until they realized that if you made a compelling argument, he'd switch and agree with you in a moment. He wasn't, you know, if he thought you were wrong, he was a complete jerk to you. But if you were right, you were dead right, and you were the highlight of the company. And I think, you know, you don't necessarily need to be that extreme, but you know, take a stance. Say, this is where I think we're going. My concern is that I wonder, does she really believe nobody knows? Or is she just timid? Because if she believes nobody knows, that's a lot scarier than I don't want to admit what I think because I don't want to be wrong. And both of those are concerning to me. Both of those aren't great things to say. I tell people all the time what I think the next big thing is. I'm probably going to be wrong about part of it. That's unlikely as it is. I don't want to hold back on my predictions just because I might be wrong. I just want to be way more right than I am wrong. You know, That's one of the big things that, you know, every successful business person I talk to, I don't expect you to be right every time. I just expect you to be more right than wrong. Man, I expect you to learn from your mistakes, you know?
Right. Totally.
And I don't know. It's interesting. It's good to hear that she's at least willing to, I mean, I honestly, I'd never noticed the whole copier printer thing. Like that should have slapped you in the face. But, you know, it's interesting to, It's good that she's calling you guys out on the easy ones, the low-hanging fruit, because those will change. But, you know, the bigger question, the harder question of how does HP survive for another 20 years, thrive for another 20 years?
Right.
That one's a tough one. And nobody knows the answer to that. You just got to be more right than wrong, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Oh. That's my opinion.
All right. Worked you up. I love it.
I know.
That's okay. That's all right. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna skip around on my
Do it.
I'm pretty much taking over now, right?
I've got a couple more. Gosh.
Well, but no. I mean, that's not what I meant. I meant, I'm the one with super.
Oh, articles. Yes.
Okay, cool. Not to say that your articles aren't super. Okay.
Highlights.
Anyways, one of the things. So, a bunch of stuff's been coming out about this Samsung Apple case, and we talked about it last week. But this new one, this new kind of cool thing came out that I thought was actually really interesting because it highlighted a guy that works at Apple that I'd never heard of before. His name is Bass Ording, BAS space ORDING. And he's one of Apple's unsung heroes. Like, you know, there's all these names that you throw around and you always hear about, but he's one of the guys that have, he's come up with some of Apple's most iconic technologies, and you don't know his name. Yeah, so, like, okay, do you have a bunch of docs open on your doc tray right now?
No.
Okay, so you know when you have, like, a bunch of Word apps
open? I try to run a tight ship,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I know. Dude, as soon as I asked the question, I knew that that wasn't, you were going to tell me, no, I don't. You're like, but anyway, so you know how when you have, like,
I start to get queasy when I have, like, more than five icons on my desktop.
You know how when you, so you know how in your tray, when you have, like, a lot of docs open, if you roll over it, it kind of expands open, it explodes open, and you can see each individual document?
Yeah.
Okay, so this dude, Bas Ording, came up with that. He was the one who designed it, and this is what's great. So Bas goes to Apple, and he decides, you know, I'm gonna interview for a position, pretty high up position. Goes in, it goes terribly.
This is in the article? Because this was in the book, too.
Oh, okay.
Spoiler,
yeah.
Spoiler, sorry. You're not there yet.
Thanks a lot.
That's okay.
But yeah, this is in the article. But they were like, yeah, but he said, he goes, yeah, he said that he was there and had this terrible interview, and he was sitting in the lobby and was like kind of cooling down when he sees Steve Jobs, and he goes, hey, I just really want to show you this because I think it's cool. You know, I don't... Just check it out, you know, just tell me what you think. And so he showed him that doc expansion thing, and Steve, who had, you know, less than an hour before said, we're not going to hire you, says, we're going to hire you. And so that, you know, that iconic, he changes his mind quickly. If you can prove that you're right and he's wrong, he is not afraid to tell you, yeah, you're right. So Bas Ording starts working for Apple. And the doc expansion one is the one that a lot of people know him about. But one of the big things that he actually is responsible, one of the other big things he's responsible for, and one of the central patents that's in debate in court right now, is actually the springy...
inertial scrolling?
Inertial rolling. Yeah, inertial scrolling. He was the one who came up with that idea for the iPhone. And really and truly... You know, and Steve Jobs has told the story about, you know, we were working on the iPad. I saw the inertial scrolling. We were talking about all these different things that we could build, you know, cars, cameras, whatever. And suddenly I said, you know what? We could make a phone out of this. And it was the inertial scrolling that triggered it for him. It was this dude is responsible for the stroke of genius of the Eureka moment. For Steve Jobs saying, let's build a phone. Like, how cool is that? You know, to be able to kind of sit there. And nobody knows your name, you know. That's the part that's why I wanted to, like, talk about him. Because, honestly, like...
Wow.
The smartphone revolution, I probably would have happened without him. But it wouldn't be the same thing. It would be totally different. You know, obviously smartphones are a thing. But the current state of smartphones... And the current state of, like, internet technology, the whole inertial scrolling thing, to be the dude that said, hey, you know what would be kind of cool? Is if when you flick the screen, it kind of inertially scrolls. And, I mean, if anybody who's done any graphic stuff has done that kind of, you know, lagging, I mean, it's not like this crazy, awesome, you know, it's not like this completely revolutionary thing. But to be kind of at that crux moment of, you know, you were the guy who came up with it. Then, you know, yeah, maybe somebody else would have come up with it at some other point, but you got to be the guy that actually gets credit for it. Your name is on the patent with Steve Jobs.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I don't know. I just, you know, I sit there and I go, I'm not going to be the genius that was the only human being that could have possibly come up with.
Well, you know, it's funny. I used another tablet, and I did the scrolling thing, and it didn't do that. It just kind of stopped when you hit the top. And it was kind of like, whoa, that's weird. It just,
right.
It feels wrong. And the inertial scrolling, right. It's so natural. Oh, you go a little beyond, it's going to bounce back. Which in reality, it's like, no, that's weird.
Right, yeah. But dude, I play with the inertial scrolling. Like, I will just scroll
totally
because it's just fun to flick things. Oh, it flicks so nicely. It feels real. I mean, and it's just like you sit there and you shrug your shoulders and go, "Yeah, that was a smart dude." Like, the
well,
fact
it also
that
it makes things feel light, which is what's nice about it.
That's such a great way to put it. That is such a great way to put it. You know, and you just sit there and you, yeah, this kid, this guy, he was the one who did it.
That's cool. Is there a picture? So, what's he look like? Nobody knows. Anonymous
yeah,
name.
And nobody can know. It's
yeah.
It's a known unknown.
It's an Apple secret.
He's locked behind, I don't know, receding hairline, looks kind of tall, white, brown hair, brownish eyes, skinny.
It's a good thing you don't ever, if you ever get robbed, you're in trouble.
Unassuming, why?
We just,
oh,
you know, brown eyes, he's got hair, a couple eyeballs, there are ears in the approximate location on the side of the head. Just one mouth. it's like awesome.
Yeah. What did you want from me?
All right. There he is. I see him.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't
was
have got
I
that
wrong?
From your description. What? Technically, no.
But,
oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Just interesting little one-on-one.
That's awesome.
Throw out there, man.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah,
or at
definitely.
Least has an eye for good design.
Yeah, definitely. What one that meet? He met Steve Jobs where Steve Jobs was. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I have an interesting. I think it's interesting. Question that was posed. So Google self-driving cars are now officially safer than human beings. Pretty mm-hmm. cool. The autonomous cars have now logged over 300,000 miles without an accident, and this is better than the average human. Basically, you
yeah,
know,
but look at that car. How could you not see it?
Right. Well, no, they're talking about that car hitting other cars because they have been rear-ended before.
Oh. Okay.
It's just not a. Well, you know, the argument
not
is
not their
that,
fault.
That yeah, on average, every 300,000 miles, a person will cause an accident.
Really?
Will be an at fault accident. Yeah, I know. Don't you feel lucky?
now I'm doing math in my head. Yeah. How much
say,
driving have I done?
Unfortunately, given the last few months, I am probably right.
You were well within those statistics.
Yeah, I know. Know if I'm well within. I might be well.
Well, let's see. I have been in an accident, but it was when I very first started driving. Have I gone 300,000 miles? Probably not, honestly.
Yeah.
So I'm.
Well, yeah.
I guess I'm within those stats too. I guess.
Yeah,
I'm just
gonna
knock
I mean,
on wood right
like,
now.
Really?
I mean, that's
yeah,
a lot of driving for an individual.
Right. Yeah. It's a. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, how many people? You know, how long does it take you to put 100,000 miles on your car? Like most
at
people,
least a year.
Take, right, at least a year if you're crazy. And we, you know, I don't think I've put 100,000 miles on. I probably yeah, I'm within that statistics. Anyway, so it kind of opens up this new interesting question that I wanted to throw out there. And maybe
I mean, you're driving crazy if you're putting on like 30,000 a year.
Right.
All right. Yeah, I'm nowhere. All right, anyways.
Right. The car that I'm driving has been driven nonstop for pretty much 10 years, and we not most of that, and it's only got 200 on it. So, yeah, I'm not. Dang it.
Yeah, me neither. That's okay.
Yeah, so this is the question. Legally and ethically, we will need to grapple with the question about safety standards for autonomous machines. As Smith, this is from the article, as Smith said to me over email, how well must these vehicles ultimately perform? Perfectly or something less? An average human driver, a perfect human driver, or a computer with a human oversight? And how should it be measured? And perhaps, toughest of all, how will we make those decisions? And really, who will make them? Which I think is actually the scariest of all of the questions, because I know the answer, and the answer is the mob will decide.
The mob.
But it's because that's how all important decisions are made, scarily enough. You might think that there are really important decisions that were made by the courts, but the most important decisions were not made by the courts.
You know, it's funny. You know, the promise, I was talking about this in a blog post this week. One of the promises of technology, supposedly, especially if you, you know, watch the Jetsons, is that it will make us more efficient and therefore give us more free time. And if you really watch the Jetsons, also, like, increase wages to insane levels. But but that's different. But the idea was, you know, it's supposed to free up your time. Whereas in reality, technology has seemed to have done the opposite, where people struggle with work-life balances and work longer and harder because, you know, surprise, surprise, in a world driven by competition and capitalism and all that kind of stuff, you don't relax because someone's going to get ahead of you and you want to stay ahead of them. And so therefore you got to work just as hard as they are, if not harder, you know, that whole thing.
Dude. So the rest of my, I have a bunch of friends and family that I was camping with this weekend, and they're spending the next 3 days staying there camping and having fun. And I came home cause I have work in the morning. So that statement hits really, really close to home. I'm a little bit sad about the whole thing, actually.
I understand. So, all that to say, you know, with the cars, the promise might be less accidents, you know, but I could very well see that in reality, that's not the case. Instead, things start to optimize around speed and productivity instead. Where you sit there and go, I could very well see where they go. What?
I suddenly understood what you're saying, which is human safety is not going to be the primary concern. Oh my gosh, that is. Harshly true.
Well, you know what they're going to say is we have proven that going the speed limit is, you know, vastly better. There's only an accident every 600 million miles, something like that. We could go 20 miles an hour faster, and we're still above the 300 million mile marker. And think of all the time saved by going 20 miles an hour faster.
By the way, it's 300,000, not 300 million.
Oh, sorry. I was reading the... Yeah, whatever. You know, 300,000. Whatever. Whatever. I could just see where... because this is what's going to happen, right? It's whatever benchmark they decide on, that's what it's going to be. And you're going to watch speed limits and other things. That's where it will start to optimize around. And, I mean, it could be kind of cool if you're, you know, going down the freeway at 200 miles an hour because you're like, dude, whatever. But then they talk about the whole fatality things and, you know, you got that to contend with. But you know they've thought about it and they're doing the math. Like, how fast could we theoretically go and have it all be okay? What if they're all autonomous and we got a special autonomous road? It could be interesting. Hmm.
Right.
Dude, yeah, I don't...
It's one of those things. Well, to me, the big question will be, when will we finally, because I think we grapple with all these questions. Well, number one, I feel like nobody expects a plane to be flown by a person anymore. A big plane, like, you would actually be horrified to find out that a human pilot piloted you all the way from LA to China. Like, that would be a bad thing if you realize that was the case. You don't want that. You want a computer to fly you most of the way because the computer's way better than the pilot, except in the clutch situation, and to a large degree, really and truly, during takeoff and landing, quote-unquote, the clutch situations, the human's only, like, asking the machine to turn left and right. If the machine decides it doesn't want to turn left and right, the machine ain't going to turn left and right.
Yeah, they push a button to make the gears go down, and assume that they will go down and are shocked and when they don't.
Right, and if all of their safety checkouts light up and everything works out and the plane says, yeah, it's cool for the gears to go down, I'll set the gears down then. You know, and that's a good thing. That's a very good thing.
Yeah.
It saves lives. You know, and so the question is, you know, that whole idea of, like, when we have, okay, we have a computer driving it with human oversight. But I'm like, I you know, you mentioned this a while back, and I think that this one is just a, you know, slap in the head, duh. It's going to be when they build them into semi-trucks. That's when everything's going to change, because now what it is you're going to take people out of the trucks, and if they can rack up a few million miles with zero to minor damn, you know, accidents, no fatalities, oh my gosh, it just will be one of those. It'll change everything, because at some point it will, like you said, because things don't optimize around safety, they tend to optimize around efficiency and profits. If you can get enough trucks being driven by computers with a dude sleeping in the back just in case, you know, watching TV, you know.
Well, like you said, it gives them an alert when it gets off the freeway.
Right,
so
exactly.
That by the time you get into the parking lot, he can take control and back it up.
Exactly. You know, yeah, or he can ask it to back up.
Yeah, really.
And you sit there and you go, once you get to that point where, okay, most people aren't designing, you know, most consumer cars don't have it, but the truckers, the people that
commercial,
are doing major
yeah.
business, the commercial uses of it, the profit center of it, once they've gotten it entrenched, it's done. And really and truly at that point, the only thing that the government can do to oversee it is really, like, take what the standard is and push it, either loosen up the standards or tighten the standards. Well, first they'll determine what the standard is, and then they'll either loosen or tighten it based on public opinion. But it's one of those things where this one's exciting because it's just going to happen organically. You know, this one is just
yeah.
going to happen. And, you know, and it's freaky because it's like, you know, the Priuses already have, like, when you go on cruise control, it's like full cruise control. It takes over the steering wheel for you. It reads the, you know, it sees the lines. You want to take your hands off the steering wheel on the newest Priuses? You can. And, like, nobody thinks twice about that. Why not? You don't have your feet on the pedals. You don't have your hands on the wheel. How is the car not autonomously driving? You know, the only thing is it can't, you know, and one of the things that they mentioned in this car is, like, it's just going to be, within 10 years, you will not be able to buy a car that doesn't know to stop when something's in front of it. You know, going back to that whole thing of asking the car permission, you know, you're going to have to ask the car permission. When you press on the gas pedal, you're not going to be giving it gas. You're going to be saying, hey, I'd like to go forward. And the car is going to go, well, let me check if there's anything in front of me, because
right.
if there's something in front of me, guess what?
We're not
going
forward.
Right. And, you know, you know, you sit there and you go, that, you know, number one, that is a technology. That's a technology of luxury cars. Right now, you pay extra for that sort of thing. And pretty soon, that's going to become standard fare.
Totally, yeah.
Where the computer drives, makes the toughest decision, makes the snap decision. And really and truly, you know, honestly, about 3 months ago, it had been really nice to have one of those, you know, automatic breakers on my car, because... shoot, I would not be in the situation I am right now if I had had one of those. And so you sit there and you go, I would want those. You're gonna see traffic. You're gonna see accident fatalities decrease, and at the same time, you're gonna see completely autonomous trucks. You know, and people, and they are going to push as hard as they can to get a person completely out of the truck. You know, and so that it can just drive itself forever. And the question will be, like, when they start doing that, because they'll start doing that, you know, what does that mean? You know, and the thing is that, you know, most laws most laws are written from the perspective of, it's not illegal unless we make it illegal, which is kind of scary. in the respect that this is going to accelerate, you know, and this is going to, I'm going to tie this into a bigger theme of the show of, asking the question of what comes next in the next 20 years. I think Google legitimately thinks that this is one of the big technologies in the next 20 years. An Internet of Things, connected smart controllers. You know, and so what they decided was, it's not going to be good enough to be a search engine. We got to build autonomous cars, you know. So they're dumping R&D into this because they really do think that this is going to be one of their major product or cash streams.
Well, it's funny. There was reading the book, the Steve Jobs book again. There came a point in time after they made the iPod where they were like, "So, what do we want to do next?" and they started looking at their technology and one of the things that they put on the table was to do a car and to make an Apple car. Right. I mean, that was a legitimate option. But they knew, you know, given their technology and their strengths, it made more sense to look into the tablet space and then ultimately the phone space. And with Google, it's kind of like with them, you get the feeling they're asking the same questions. Okay, so what cool things can we do with our strengths and our resources? And they go, we're good at mapping. We're good at big data.
Right. One of their strengths is navigating, which is weird, but it's like, yeah, that one just kind of happened. And
it's not the navigating. It's this desire to add structure to everything. And maps is data, as far as they're concerned. And they are just collecting more and more physical information so they can turn it into data. And and a map, streetways, is an obvious, easy place to start. Right now they're doing like trails and backpacking. And, you know, they keep going. And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, cool, we got that. And we got big warehouses. We could process a ton of data. This is starting to look cool. I think we know where we can go with this. And I don't know. I wonder how much of it, like, they went, you know what would be cool is if we had an autonomous car. And they went, well, in order to do that, we'd have to have a mapping service. Okay, let's start with that.
Yeah. it would be interesting to see at what – it would be fascinating to know at what point the idea of an autonomous car got pitched. Was that something that somebody did the – yeah, because that's very easily one of those – you know, I've often
let's start with the map and go from there. Let's see how well we do on that.
Right. I've often envisioned an army of robots doing all manufacturing around the world. And, you know, the question is, okay, let's start at that goal and then work backwards to these other – what are the other technologies we need to pioneer and perfect first? And, you know, there are some obvious ones along the way. And that – yeah, that very well could be what happened with the Google car was – well, how can we build a Google car? Well, one of the things that the Google car is going to need to know is how to get around. It's going to need a good map. Well, are there any good maps out there? Well, there's MapQuest. No, I said a good map.
This is no.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's very, you know, it's very possible that that's, you know, we're going to need a good search algorithm. Well, why can't we build a mapping program? I think that was something that somebody would use. But yeah, the actual genesis of it was they wanted a maps database. Well, I think and like you said, they're a data-driven company. They like to take a ton of data and then do something with it. And do many things with it if they can.
Yeah.
And so really and truly the desire was to get map data and then do things with it. And one of the things they wanted to do with it was to build autonomous cars, and nobody else was building an autonomous car, so they sat there and went to where they could install Google Maps and say, look, our data works here. So they built their own. Because they're stupid rich, and they can do that sort of thing. and, you know, I don't know, but yeah, I definitely get the feeling that this one is going, like I said at the very beginning, this one's going to be decided by the mob, and like you said, yeah, I actually think that the bar to entry is going to be, well, what is the standard now? Can we beat that standard by, I don't know, give it a safety factor too? So we're now twice as safe as a human being. Yeah, it's good enough, you know? It'll be considered an industrial accident the first time a car, you know, a truck runs into a car on the freeway. And it'll be taken care of like that, you know. Isaac Asimov already told us what happens when industrial robots start mingling with human beings. That's, you know.
What was the answer to that?
Oh, basically that sort of thing's treated like an industrial accident. Even really, really, really smart.
Well, so what does
Like,
that mean? So
clearly.
I'm not going to play like I'm super smart here. What do you mean by industrial
Okay.
accident?
So, let's say you're walking by a construction site and I don't know,
I-beam hits me in the
an
head.
I-beam, thank you, falls down. Yeah, hits you in the head and break or hits you in the leg and breaks your leg. That's an
That would
industrial
hurt.
accident. You just so happen, yeah, it's not fun. You don't want that to happen, but yeah, and so that falls under the guise of industrial accidents.
So it's when some sort of commercial service hits
Does damage to
commerce,
either one of
or
its employees or one of its or somebody else, you know.
is it manufacturing slash construction related? Like, do retail stores have industrial accidents?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm just curious. I don't know either.
Yeah.
I'm learning. All right.
No.
Anyways.
No. Yeah.
So when a truck hits a
Yeah, I think that's.
when a commercial truck hits a private car, that's considered an industrial accident.
I don't know. I don't think
And why
so,
is
but
that a
I think
big
it
deal
becomes
that it's
something.
labeled as an industrial accident as opposed to an accident?
I don't know. I just think that it's one of those. It's different because it's like who's re because you know who is responsible when a truck hits a when a when a when somebody's driving a truck and they hit the car in front of them, you blame the driver of the truck, not the truck. But when the truck hits somebody and there's no driver, who's at fault? Was it the guy who wrote the program? Was it the design who owns the truck? Is it the company who owns the truck? Is it the product that was being moved? Who's responsible? And that's, you know, and so it's like when you're like,
Well,
let's
that's
say you are,
obvious,
you know, like you're an
so
Indian.
kidding. It's
Oh,
not.
it is?
It's
Okay.
not.
I think it is.
Oh,
Well, then help me out.
enlighten me.
Yeah. you know, and so that's the sort of thing, you know, that I think you start to expect,
Yeah.
you know.
Those are tough questions. You know, a
I
judge is gonna
know.
decide that. No, it's the mob. Is that what we decided?
The mob, yeah, the ju judges don't decide these sorts of things.
No. They just
Yeah.
get paid to say what the mob wants. What?
Pretty
No.
much. Wow,
No, we
that
don't
was a
believe that. I don't believe that. I'm not going to speak for Matthew. I do not represent any of Matthew's opinions.
Yeah, but
He's on his own.
I'm gonna say I get you know, yes, politically I get so sour-faced about everything. Oh, it's all stupid anyways. The system's rigged.
The system's rigged.
No, I
Oh
don't.
man.
I
That's funny.
yeah. So, anyways.
So driving cars. Cool.
Yeah. Cool. What else you want to talk about? You
So,
bring me some.
all right, all right, all right. I got two.
Okay.
I should probably spread this out.
Oh.
So have you been paying attention at all to what's been going on with Craigslist?
No, I haven't.
I feel like they've jumped the shark. Maybe I'm wrong.
Really?
Maybe they're smart enough then to overcome with it. But they got into this weird debate where, or Craigslist, obviously, people love them. They're amazing. They seem to have this monopoly on the classified market. Good for them.
Which is strange considering the fact that it's kind of a lame website.
Yeah, but that's the way it is. And so other companies have been trying to build on top of Craigslist to improve their the way things look, like because of the exact reason that you just said, because it looks like it's from 1990.
Right.
Craigslist does not like it and actively tries to stop people from doing that, to the point where they're suing companies left and right in order to stop them.
Wait, so if you build a I don't know, a JavaScript based skin. So basically you build a enhancement suite of tools that basically takes all of the cool data, HTML that you pull from there and spruces it up a bit. They sue companies for doing that.
Let's say theoretically, you take all of their housing or apartment listings and put it on a map instead of in their list algorithm. Yes, you might get sued by Craigslist.
You guys can't see the face I'm making, but that's dumb.
Well, so they've been winning successfully.
And, well, it's their data. I mean,
yeah. So they recently made now when you would do a new ad, you had to say like, "This is Craigslist's ad. It's not mine, and I will not post it anywhere else." Which, by the way, that one only lasted like a week before users kind of got grumbly, and they got rid of that one. But that was one of the things that they did, at least the time when I copied this article. But then this let's just go with this fictional idea that I randomly came up with about taking apartment listings and putting a map to it.
And making them useful?
Yeah. Let's pretend that this company is actually pretty smart and figures out a way to get to their data without going to the Craigslist site.
Okay.
So, like, say, for example, they're able to crawl Google search results and use that to populate their own database.
Interesting.
So Craigslist this week, I don't know, August 7th.
So Google, let me get this straight. So Google crawls Craigslist.
Yeah.
And then somebody crawls Google and takes that data and puts it on their own website for later Google to come back and crawl.
It's good to be Google. And now Craigslist can't theoretically, sue them because they're not stealing from Craigslist.
Okay.
So, Craigslist solution? They put the no bots tag on the top of all their pages now. Meaning what Google and others, Bing, I guess, can no longer crawl Craigslist.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. That was their solution. Yeah, by the way, that fictional website was called PadMapper, just for the record.
It doesn't work very well anymore, does it?
Probably not.
So this is interesting. This is a curious decision because I'm going to go out on a limb here and share with you one of my user trends. I have never Googled Craigslist or any Craigslist listings. I've used Craigslist.
Me too.
I found a living quarters via Craigslist. I've never used Google to search Craigslist. It's actually, I make fun of the site, but the beauty of its simplicity is that it's so easy to navigate in and of itself that I don't need to Google my way around it. Unlike, most schools that I've attended, I've needed to Google my way around them to find anything. Whereas with Craigslist, I specifically don't. Which to me is actually, to me, that's the hallmark of good website design. I make fun of the fact that it's not pretty, but the reality of it is it's an incredibly well designed website, and that's the reason why they defend the style as much as they do, and why they've been as successful as they are.
Yeah, and the real question is how much of it. So that's a purposeful. I'm looking for something on Craigslist search. How much traffic and actual sales or whatever. Do they get from people going, I'm looking for a dishwasher. Oh, check this out. There's one in my neighborhood. I don't know. That was a weird example. I don't know why I came up with that one.
Yeah.
But that feels like that's something you get on Craigslist. But
right, yeah. It does, doesn't it?
Not eBay.
Looking for a used pair of shoes.
We're going to find me some of those. But yeah, so they... So I you read that and it's kind of like, what's going on with Craigslist? They're kind of getting a little grumpy lately, and
right.
I don't know if maybe they won't see an initial thing. My guess though is you might see it where apps like PadMapper and whatever, they give up, close their doors, and then they're like, turn the search tab back on, please. Thank you.
Right.
You can see it 6 months from now. They just quietly release it again.
Right, that's one of those. It's interesting because, that goes back to that classic. Somebody wants it bad enough, there ain't nothing you can do to stop them. They're going to do it. You know, because eventually, you know, now what's going to happen is you're gonna get into the realm of the people that, you know, you download a cool browser that you type in Craigslist and, or this would be awesome, a Chrome extension that's not a website, that's an open source thing, it goes into Chrome, and it looks up a bunch of addresses from some website you typed in, and it will put all of those addresses plus a link onto Google Maps, just in case you wanted that. You know, you sit there and you shrug your shoulders and you go, what's to stop people from doing, you know, there are, you know, the hacker mantra of is there's always another way. You know, you can't stop me. If I want to do this, I will do this. And just, so the question is how far is Craigslist willing to go? And number two, and this is an important one, is how important was Google to their business success, you know? Weirdly enough, probably not very, because they don't make a lot of money. well, they do, but I've never quite figured out how they make any money.
Craigslist?
Yeah.
Employment ads. They charge employers to post.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
That's it.
That makes sense. I was going to say, because I never see any, hey, keep us open and free ads like you see on Wikipedia.
No, they didn't get greedy. That was the trick. So they don't make billions. Yeah. They just make millions. Right. Yeah, they do make billions. I don't know. They're privately held. So.
Right.
But, yeah, that's how they do it. They just, for certain ones where, you know, employers are willing to pay. People, you know, right. Consumers, which, not really.
You know, I had a really interesting conversation today with a dude that actually works for Clear Channel, and I don't know.
Go ahead.
I said that. I'm gonna bank on the fact that we're not big enough to get anybody in trouble on this one.
All right. Ask my brother. Do it.
But he had a really interesting comment about, you know, we talked about Facebook for a while, and he was talking about how Facebook's a joke from an advertising perspective, which we've already gone over. But one of the comments he made was, he goes, I can't believe that they give away their business pages for free. And, you know, why don't you charge to make a fan page for a business? And I thought about that for a while. I didn't scoff or anything, but, you know, one of Facebook's big things is they want everybody to use their service. And the idea is that once everybody uses it, then we can make money off of it. But that might not be the right perspective to some degree. Maybe, you know, certain levels of businesses, certain number of likes, certain numbers of something, there's a certain things that are distinctly different where you sit there and go, people are willing to pay for that where they're not willing to pay for these. You know, maybe you make them different. Maybe there's a fan page and then there's the business pages where the business pages are distinctly different than the fan pages. Where you're not when you pay to promote your fan page, you know, you're not competing against Justin Bieber. You know, you're competing, you know, you're just doing your own thing. They're designed, they're more focused ads, they're more interactive. And you sit there and that's basically what you're saying with is going on with Craigslist, is they've got these focused things with people who are willing to pay the money, you know, for them. Why does Google give away their search engines for free? Because nobody's willing to pay for a search engine, but advertisers are willing to pay for advertisements on a search engine. So guess who they charge money to? You know, it's one of those like, duh, you know. And why don't companies, man, Facebook, why aren't you listening to us, Mark? We have all of your answers. This is 2 weeks in a row. Man, we're trying to help you out here, brother.
Trying to help
and,
you out.
But yeah, that's interesting. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. I'm basing that off my own. I feel like people who use Craigslist go type in, and it's like eBay. I never buy anything off of eBay unless I'm going to eBay.com. Even though it like comes up in my search results, that I never when I Google this product. But I find it's interesting when I go and buy stuff, I don't Google it. I don't actually. And maybe this is just me. I don't know. But I don't trust Google. Like, Because it's so easy to get search engine optimizations in there. Like, I want to actually search through Amazon. I want to search through. I'll use Google to kind of get a sense of price range and what's out there. Maybe a company that I didn't see. But it's like, I know based on what products I want, what companies I want to go purchase through. When I want computer stuff, okay, I'm going to Newegg. If I want, living locations, okay, I'll check out Craigslist. Oh, I want some cool, out-of-date Legos that, they stopped making 10 years ago. I'm going to go to eBay and pay out the ears. Sorry, what did I say?
eBay. I was just helping you out.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to go to eBay and, pay out the ears. And so, which I don't know. I don't actually have a sense if I'm different. What about you, James? Do you Google stuff like that?
There have been a few things that I have bought just based off of the doing a Google search, the shopping thing or whatever it's called now. But I tend to click on websites that I recognize the names of on the results.
Right.
And then typically, like, if I'm searching for something and I see, like, an Amazon thing pop up, I'll then click on that one and then do another search on Amazon to see what other flavors there are of it.
Right.
So, it's a jump off point in that sense. I don't buy anything off
it's
of
sort
eBay.
Of like if I'm
I don't I've bought like one thing off of Craigslist. I've sold stuff on Craigslist, but that's different. I don't go to Newegg. I'm pretty much like Amazon's kind of my one-stop shop as they want.
I know. Ryan, I was going to say you just made their day.
That's
exactly
true.
What they wanted to hear. You know, honestly though, I wouldn't say they're my one-stop shop, but they get most of my online. I'm buying this, money. If it's out of date, I'm only going to get it on eBay. If it's, super high-end electronics, usually I can get it a better component for cheaper on Newegg. But outside of that,
I don't buy component
I'm
stuff.
I'm going to buy it on, I pretty much only buy RAM. Cables are usually cheaper. This is long short of it for me. I like them though. I like searching. I just like going there and looking up prices and component stuff. I don't know. It's I window shop at Newegg, which probably drives them crazy. Stop visiting. Buy something. Stop loitering. That'll be an interesting one to follow. I definitely want to hear more about that as time goes on. Just see if that's really hurting them or not, because I don't ever use Google to go to Craigslist, so I know it won't affect me at all.
It's fun,
but
so then obviously they feel the same way since they were willing to do that,
right?
Which is fine.
So definitely. So I thought this was kind of interesting. We're gonna get to find out pretty soon here. Which bloggers Google and Oracle pay? A judge, basically, the judge who actually oversaw Oracle. Yeah, I know. Bummer. I was disappointed that we're not affected by this. It'd be pretty nice to be paid by them. But basically, the judge said, I've been reading stuff online, and there's a lot of garbage out there. And I kind of want to know who's saying it and why they're saying it. And his argument is that that this could be really useful in any appeals case. But I kind of feel I don't exactly know where he gets the authority to do this, but turns out he has the authority to do this. And so he's ordered Google and Oracle to reveal which bloggers who have covered the trial between them, which, as you all know, is the trial over the similarities.
I'm gonna be kind of shocked if it's more than one.
Right, me too. But this is the trial over the eerie similarities between Java and Android. Their virtual engine or virtual machines. So I don't know. It will be surprising to see who's on this list. I don't know. I hope it's juicy. We don't usually talk about the blogosphere and who we like and dislike and whatnot. But that'd be fun to have a reason to talk about it. You know, and be like, oh my gosh, no wonder.
Did they have to say how much they're paying them, or they just get paid?
I think it's just who's on whose payroll.
Who's on the payroll?
What'll be awesome is when you realize like there are certain authors that are on both payrolls.
Yes.
Oh baby.
Those are the guys who are sweating it out, going, "Oh boy,
yeah.
don't comply."
Yeah. Argue, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, he's just writing. I think this is horrible. The judge is asking. Comes to find
out.
This is
totally unconstitutional.
Yeah, should not happen. Fight it. Wow, that's really weird. Yeah. We didn't tell him to write that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, last ditch effort. Yeah.
So when are we gonna know? Like, when's it coming out? Whenever it comes out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
whenever
never
it comes
any timelines
out, pretty much.
On these things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the courts. but it's a known it's a knowable. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So this is another one that's kind of interesting. This is a Google is trying to improve the Omnibar, improve the Google search, and people freaked out.
Yeah, explain this to me, because I didn't fully understand. I didn't take the time to learn about it. Let me put it that way.
So basically, what happened was Google. My take on this is kind of cynical towards the people who are, you know, screaming for privacy. But basically what happens is you got Gmail. If you use Gmail, you know it. It's pretty awesome.
Yep.
At the very top of your Gmail page, there's a search bar. In that search bar, you can put, like, people's names. You can put topics. You can put anything. And it will return the emails that it thinks are most related to what you're looking for. It's, like, one of the best parts of it because it's one of the best search engines that's optimized for your email. Pretty cool. Well, it turns out that Google thinks that sometimes when you're Googling stuff and you're like, what is, you know, what would be the, you know, where would be a good place to stay in China on these dates? Like, I want hotel rooms, but whatever. I don't know why you would write out that long of a Google search, but let's say you did.
Okay.
And it returns a bunch of results. What they want to do is they want to be able to look into your personal information, aka your emails, which they've been doing for a long time. Actually, pretty much since you signed up for your Gmail, they've been doing this. And they want to basically say, when you Google search something, we're not just going to search our database. We're also going to search your email. And if we see anything in your email that seems similar, there's going to be a section on the side of the Google search that's going to have your email results too. Just so, like, if it's pertinent, we're going to throw that in. Just, you know, whatever. So basically what they're allowing you to do is search your Gmail in the Google search bar. So the Omnibar is becoming more omnipresent.
So let's say, for example, you did a search for a local coffee shop because you had decided to set up a meeting with a friend, then you set it up over email. In addition to the map and, you know, that maybe their official page and other random links that don't matter, it would also show that email where you mentioned.
Yeah, but it would be like
shop?
It would be in a different section outside of your top 10 search results.
Okay.
Yeah, but it would show that email. Basically, that's all it is.
Huh.
That's it.
What's wrong
with
that?
People are freaking out.
they're not using that to.
I think it sounds awesome.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Number one, it's an opt-in thing. You don't have to do it. They learned a lot from Buzz. You can't just force everybody to do it.
How do you opt into it? Is this something I can do right now, or is this coming shortly?
I think it's coming shortly. I didn't actually look into it because I want it. I mean, I sit there and go, that's basically what you're saying is I can search my Gmail from my search bar. But, like, one of the things people are like,
cool.
I guess the personal information guys that are freaking out about, number one, they freak out about everything, and when you freak out about stupid things, it weakens your case. And just letting you know,
dude, hello, you're doing your email on one of their servers.
I know. That's
what's the difference between an Omnibar or 2 inches down on a web page? No matter what, your search goes through their servers. It's the same search engine, actually.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you should think you just whatever. They're it's annoying, but what they're like, well, what if like I'm not in Gmail and I Google search something, or am I like brand Google searching something, and all of a sudden my emails are popping up.
Okay,
you're like,
all right, all
you're
right.
You're logged in. You have the same user ID. You're logged into Gmail, or you're logged into Google. Did you know that all you have to do is type in Gmail into the bar, and oh my gosh, we're still logged into Gmail? Like,
or
really?
Click on that link up there on the search results that says the word Gmail.
Exactly. You shrug your shoulders and I go, okay, I can understand why you would make it so you can turn it on and off. For that reason, that's cool. But really, this is one of like the dumbest controversies I've ever heard. It's almost like Google didn't want to actually advertise this functionality, but they wanted everybody to talk about it so that people would like get it. And so they're like, I don't know, let's have somebody write some email or some article about it and just get people's attention. You know, it's so dumb. It just, I don't know. It's definitely one of those ones where it seems a bit overblown.
Wow. Well, let me, here's one that's not been overblown. Let's pretend that you were a payments startup and you were, you know, you got some traction and you're starting to take off. What would you consider to be like awesome if you were, you know, trying to get traction and attract people to use your service?
I'm a payments.
Yeah. So like, let's say like you accept credit cards and you're a service that, you know, accepts credit cards and merchants use you and stuff like that. What would be like, you know, where you go, this is, you know, what would really help out your business, I guess?
I don't know. PayPal deciding that you were a threat?
Well, no, that would hurt your business, right?
Well, unless they bought you.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, no, let's not say that's the case.
All right.
I see where you're going.
I feel like you're leading me somewhere, and I don't know where we're going.
I am. Fair enough. It might be a major retailer deciding to use your service.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, that would be good. So let's say that you're Square, which is the card reader app for, I'm pretty sure it's on Android as well as iPhone. It's a little square. You swipe your card whoosh, on your smartphone, on your iPad, and stuff like that.
This is the coolest technology. For those of you who don't know, it's a little square thing that plugs into the audio jack, and when you slide your card through it,
it plays a song.
It literally converts the electromagnetic things on your strip into an audio wave. The microphone hears, and then the app basically can turn that audio thing into a credit card number,
and that's cool.
How it grabs your. It's actually really cool. I like them a lot. Yeah.
So that those guys announced this week that Starbucks has signed up for Square.
Oh baby!
Yeah, whoa. They're going to. What?
I said, "Oh baby," and then it processed. So I was like, "Whoa." That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So pretty soon, Square will be accepted in 7,000 Starbucks stores. How about that for a shot in the arm?
That's huge.
Yeah, so Starbucks was – what they found was that people were using their – you know, they had those loyalty cards, and they came out with a Starbucks loyalty app that I think technically you can, like, pay through the app, I think, or something – I don't know.
Well, what it is our
scan
our
the loyalty card. Yeah,
for.
Okay. Yeah, tell me how it
well,
works.
Basically what it comes up with a one of those like 2D barcodes that has your card number on it. So they just scan that 2D barcode and that, you know, connects you to your they have you register, you know, it's the same number quote unquote as your same ID as your loyalty card, so it works the exact same. You
yeah,
just
and
don't
so
need the loyalty card.
But what Starbucks found is that people use that app all the time.
Right.
It's just been a huge, huge success beyond anything that they, imagined. And so they started to go, okay, what's the next logical step? Well, accepting payments through this card. Let people pay with their phones or, you know, do that kind of stuff. And they started doing, like, okay, what would it take for us to be able to do that? What kind of investments would we have to make? And started going down that track and went. And then at the same time, other new, like, card swiping types of companies started approaching Starbucks and saying, hey, use our service to do it. And Starbucks was like, well, okay, we'll think about it. And so in that process, they went, well, you know, we should check out Square because we've heard some stuff about it. And so they checked out Square and went, yeah, that's the one we would like to use. That way we don't have to invest in our technology. We can just use what they've got. They're going to use a little bit different system, it sounds like, at least at the beginning, kind of their own custom deal as opposed to using the regular Square app. I think it'll be a while before you see iPads inside of Starbucks, but yeah, I'm sure it's heading that way. Because one of the cool things that Square has done is they have what's called it's a wallet or a card case, I don't remember. But basically you input your card information onto your phone, and then and the business will have their register on an iPad basically. And you literally when you walk into the store, it's all location aware. It knows that you're there. And you will pop up onto the register with your face, and they'll say, what do you want? And you order it. They hit, you know, do it. And I can't remember if you got to, like, do something with your phone. But basically it's a cardless interaction. And they've got all the information regarding your favorites and your transaction history, you know, and all that stuff. You know, that's one of the ways that it works. And, Starbucks is going to start heading that direction. I mean, could you imagine, like, with our mom, who, like you said, goes pretty regularly, and sometimes there's a long line, is if instead of, sometimes they'll go through the line and they'll get your orders ahead of time so that they can get it started before you have to pay.
Right.
It's literally like they're walking through with their iPhone or their iPad. They're taking your orders, and you're paying right there on the spot. Okay, go sit down. Get out of line. Don't worry about it.
Nice.
And
that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, and you're just like, don't pull out your card. No, you literally just
could you imagine? Wait. Let's take it a step further. Let's go full Apple on this thing. Let's get rid of the cash registers, and the only bar is the actual bar, the coffee bar where they give you coffees. That's how you do it. The baristas that take money, they just walk the store. Can I get you anything more? You want anything? That'd be awesome. You know, like
kind of restaurant
they're
style?
Such a big. Right, it's such a big restaurant-style thing. You know, maybe you have a standing room where you can...
Go ahead, what were you saying? I knocked my thing. Kind of restaurant-style, or you were thinking different?
Right, exactly. Well, that's what I'm thinking, but, and maybe you'd have a region where you could walk in and just stand there and take it to go sort of thing. So you'd have two areas. But, why in the world would you need a barista standing behind the counter? Why can't she just stand, this is really sexist. Why can't he just stand, and take your order too?
I can see that. Yeah. Well, I mean, other than the fact that not everyone's going to have this, but yeah.
Right.
No, it's, well, I guess
but
that's
over
when you
time,
had the little square thing. And yeah, no, it's cool. I like in one of his lines, he goes, by embracing Square, Starbucks has validated these ideas as powerful tools, not just for small businesses, but for smart businesses. It's like, so if you use Square, you're a smart business.
Yes,
I like it.
I know. That's cool. I'm glad to hear that. Square, I've been impressed with them
like
since their early days.
Makes me want to have a yard sale just so I can use it.
Right.
But I don't have enough stuff, which is not a bad thing, I guess.
You have one, right?
I do. Yeah, I got them before pay to get them.
Oh, that's right. You know what you got to do? What you got to do is you got to turn on the member recording app and put that in as your microphone and start the recording and just swipe your card and see what it sounds like. What does your card sound like? That would be kind of a cool experiment to run.
What do I do?
You'd plug it in and you would turn on your memo recording. So basically just recording
okay,
audio
okay.
from your...
I'll be right back, okay?
All right, cool.
Entertain. We'll do this live.
All right. So we're going to move on. What we'll be talking about next is a curious question. Why does Curiosity only have a 2-megabit camera? Or, sorry, megapixel camera. Okay, James is coming right back now.
I'm back. Okay.
Do you have a credit card?
I do. I got that, too.
Do you have a credit card? Okay, good.
I got my Square.
Good. Okay, put it into your audio jack on your phone.
Done.
Okay, now turn on the memo recording thing.
All right, this is somewhere around here. Voice memos.
Right. Now, once you start recording, it should be dead. There shouldn't be anything. It should, like, the little needle should be static.
It's not moving.
Okay, good. Now run your card through it.
Which way do I do this? It's been a while.
Yeah.
Okay, I made a sound. I'll do it again.
Okay, now stop playing.
Okay.
Or stop recording, I mean.
Done. How do I...
And then... How do you play it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never make one.
Oh, okay. Here we go. I got it.
Let me... Okay.
Whoa! That's what my card sounds like.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
That was neat. Let's do it again here.
Oh, that actually sounded the same both times to me.
That's good.
That's cool, man.
That's alien-like. I wonder if it looks like it has like a little spinny wheel in it, which I wonder if that's what you're hearing, but there you go. That is what your credit card sounds like.
That's cool, man. That's you know what's gonna happen now? Now everybody has an audio recording
Seriously.
Of what your card sounds right.
That's why I use a credit card.
I hope you don't have a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Well, there you go. That was cool.
That was cool. Glad we did that. Anyway, so what I was going to talk about, and this probably would be the last article.
Do it.
Was curious question. Why does Curiosity only have a 2-megapixel camera?
Why is that?
Yeah.
Which,
so,
by the way, they did show like, here's the first low res shot thumbnail sketch. And I looked at it and went, this is low res? Wow.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Wait, yeah. So. Wait, you obviously didn't see the 64x64 pixel one that they sent back?
No.
The very, very first one was only 64x64.
That's pretty... All right.
And then, yeah, black and white. I mean, it was tiny.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the super main camera on Curiosity is only 2 megapixels, which if you follow camera technology at all, that's tiny. Most cameras, you know, your iPhones nowadays, they have what? Are they at 5 or 8?
I don't know, 4 or 5, something.
Yeah, and like your average.
Maybe it is 8. I don't know.
High-end Android ones. Yeah, I don't know. It's awesome, basically. I know that like high-end Android ones are all at 8, so it's great. You get these great, huge numbers of megapixels. So the question is, why would a $2.5 billion remote control car only have a 2-megapixel? Well, number one, what they said. Was they started building this thing in 2004, so back off. Which, like, as soon as they mentioned that, you're like, yeah, that's true. That's a long time ago. And so, you know, 2 megapixels at the time was pretty new, awesome technology. Not cutting edge, but it was at the top of it. Top of the pile. They talked about that as one of their big, big reasons. Number two, they're not able to send a lot of data, it turns out. It's actually like they have I can't remember the exact number. Oh, it's 32 megabytes a day is basically the top amount of data. Which that's with 3 satellites around Mars. Turns out it's difficult to communicate that over that far of a distance. So they just can't send a lot of data. And so it's kind of like, you know, low resolution pictures are favored in that. But this is the really interesting thing, and this is why I wanted to bring this up, because I love this kind of stuff. This is where, you know, I always get really impressed and think to myself, man, that engineer, whoever figured this one out, was way smarter than me. Basically, their argument was, nothing moves on Mars, so we don't need to take really high-resolution pictures in a single shutter. What they do is they basically zoom way out, and they get way deep into, you know, you see far, and then they take a picture, and then they move over a fraction of a degree, and they take a picture. They move over a fraction of a degree, and they take a picture, and then they move it up a fraction of a degree, and they take a picture, and they're transmitting all of this data along with all sorts of other things that they're taking. Because they have these super precisely controlled cameras, what they do is they piece patch these really zoomed out pictures together, and then you get these composites where everything lines up perfectly, and they basically end up with these like ultra high megapixel pictures. It's like if you've seen the 360.
Yeah, I saw the very first one.
I linked it on my Twitter. Yeah, that's like, that's how they did that. They don't have a 360 camera. They don't have a camera that can take instantly 360 degrees. They have one really low resolution that zooms out far, and they just take a bunch of pictures. very cool. I thought it was really. I sit there and go, man, that's the kind of thing that I. That's smart engineering right there.
So what happens if we find something moving on Mars? Then you just
everybody freaks out, and suddenly, you know, all that money that we're spending on food and wars and medicine,
the Olympics,
we stop that and we go to Mars. We send a lot of people there because stuff's moving that ain't supposed to be moving. We don't know that they don't want to go to war with us yet. So that's basically what happens.
It is a pretty desolate place looking at this picture. There isn't much.
Yeah, it's basically a big beach. It's surprisingly
that's so weird.
Not very fun.
Yeah, you're just like, so dirt, huh?
Yeah. I know. It's like there's this part of me that's like, it's amazing, cool, like you want to cheer accomplishment. At the same time, you're like,
come to find out, it's a bunch of dirt.
Yeah, just a pile of rocks, really. It's Mars rocks, which are very cool rock. I mean, as far as rocks go, yeah, I get it. But at the same time, I don't know. I tweeted over the week that for whatever reason, I wasn't really jazzed and excited about it until I saw the tracks. And then for some reason, that one was what really lit me up, and I started reading all sorts of stuff about it because I was like, yeah, there's something cool about seeing the tire tracks. We're controlling this thing. It's driving around on Mars. Like, that's a long distance away.
I mean, in some ways,
that's another planet.
I'm not going down the conspiracy track, but in some ways it just feels fake, you know? Like, it's just hard to imagine. There is this little mechanical, you know, Mini Cooper sitting on a planet many, many, many miles away, taking pictures and sending it back to Earth. It's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's almost ludicrous. Yeah.
To where, I mean, because I look at that and go, there's a part of me that goes, it's a bunch of rock. Get over it. You know, there's nothing exciting to see here. But on the other hand, it's like, no, you don't understand. This is literally an object floating around in space that's huge.
Yeah, this would be like going, I mean, this is like the first journey to the new world, quote unquote, literally, but like a million times more impressive because you can't breathe there and there's nobody there. It's just a camera.
I wonder if
with
that
wheels.
Was like some of the reactions of the crew on like Columbus's ship where they were just like, and they're trees. Awesome. You know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
Can we go back
was.
Now?
Yeah.
We've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen trees before, just so you know.
This is great. Fantastic. Yeah, there's the furlough bros of the Columbus crew. Can we get back to our Facebook? Because That's interesting to me. Curiosity, being on another
Yeah.
planet. I don't know.
Who won the 100
I don't
again?
know,
That's
guys.
really what I care
Right.
about.
Yeah, I
That's just
know.
funny.
Man.
That's I it's
I feel like a bad
it's
person now.
it's I it's legitimately cool. I just it's hard to wrap your mind around why it's cool, I guess, 'cause the pictures don't quite
Yeah,
do
yeah.
that part justice. Other than it does look like an
Right.
alien world, you know, it doesn't. You look at it and you go, "Hey, is this Earth? Is that what Earth?" Nah, it looks a little weird.
Yeah. I still want to see what Neptune or Jupiter looks like.
That would
I
be
know that's
cool.
probably not gonna. I know that's
I don't
one's
know, but
probably
it's
not gonna
only cool
happen
because it's
because.
unknown, right? The second I see it, it's like,
Right.
yep, gases,
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah. Turns out it's a gas giant and crushes anything that gets close to its surface. Awesome.
Weird, we would have guessed. Yeah.
But what's that one quote? I think it was an XKCD quote that, I think that the universe is, he said, I think that the universe is populated by species that didn't, or that decided to not make the logical understanding issue, or decision of staying at home. It's just like exploration. It was a hard one to justify. It really is, until you find something. And then it's like, 'cause you're basically just throwing car-sized RC cameras out there and we'll see. We're just gonna see what's there. Like, we don't know what's there. We don't know what to
We're just,
expect. That's the crazy part, right? All of those NASA dudes, like, as far as they're concerned, yeah, it just might be a rock in space. But it's that tiny sliver of maybe there's organic chemicals there. Maybe there's a chance to sustain life. Maybe there are aliens buried deep underneath the surface that are, having this crazy, sophisticated, super sentient, I don't know. We're not gonna find out unless we go there and look.
Yeah.
It's cool. Which I can support that. I can justify that in the national budget, that's for sure. But
Man.
I'm glad they leave these decisions up to me. But
That's
I don't
funny.
know.
That's cool. That's awesome. I like
Yeah.
Curious. We should keep talking about it. So,
Definitely.
anything else going on besides a camping trip that you're skipping out on? Or went back
Well,
early from?
yeah, I got back early from. And now just fixing my car this week. This week I broadcast to you as a N-year-old individual. Next week I will be broadcasting to you as an N+1 year old. I don't know why I'm hiding that. If you go to Facebook, which I'm clearly connected to, I'm turning 26 on Saturday. But I'm sure we'll go over that again next week.
Cool.
But that's cool. I play too much Skyrim nowadays. I'm like went from not playing video games at all to, hey, this is kind of fun.
Yeah, 8 hours later. Whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy,
Oh my
that didn't
gosh.
feel like that long, just a little longer. I'm
Yeah,
almost I just want to
exactly.
finish this.
I just gotta get through. I just gotta get to the end of this quest.
Yeah,
It's awful.
exactly. Oh man, it's bad. Cool. I haven't been doing
What
anything
about you?
fun.
That's.
Working on a fence, I guess that's the big thing. Still, yes, still. That is my life. But yeah, that's it.
That's nice. I like
Yeah.
it.
Cool. Good show, good times. Thank you everybody for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my former Olympian brother, former, what was it again? I always forget.
That's close enough. Former Olympic brother.
That guy is Matthew Furlow. So with that, we will talk next time. And now the secret part of the broadcast.
The fun part.